Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Desiree Wingerter, Director of Programs for the Collaboration Center Foundation. The nonprofit organization recently opened their new Collaboration Cafe, offering not just refreshment for customers, but a unique opportunity for its workers as well. Desiree, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather. I'm excited to be here.
So what exactly is the Collaboration Center?
So the Collaboration Center Foundation, we are a nonprofit established in 2019. And really our mission is to support individuals of all ages with intellectual, developmental, and physical disabilities, along with their family members too. Heather, we really find that to be an important component, that we're not just serving an individual with a disability, but also their family members who are impacted. So we're housed on a 5-acre campus in the southwest part of town. It used to actually be a horse ranch, which is really unique. This horse ranch we have turned into a multidisciplinary hub, and other nonprofits and treatment providers, businesses who are all disability focused, run services side by side on this campus. We're also really interested in how do we support the whole human, right? So we're looking at, you know, recreation, we're looking at art, we have a community garden, we have a rescue tortoise habitat, adaptive playground equipment, a meditation garden, and more. It's just a really beautiful campus.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, now, what is the Collaboration Cafe?
So the Collab Cafe, we launched really just a couple weeks ago. It's a really important project for the community, providing hands-on vocational training for adults with disabilities. And so it's a grab-and-go model. So it's in the heart of the campus. It's right in the hub where all those services that I was talking about are taking place. So it allows for adults with disabilities to get workplace experience and training opportunities within the food service industry.
Okay, so is this the type of job experience that the employees couldn't find elsewhere?
So there are a couple of other job training programs in the community for sure. Collab Cafe, you know, we're really looking at job training for individuals with all different disabilities. So that's one thing that kind of sets us apart. In addition, you know, it's all on campus. So all of the customers that are going to be coming to Collab Cafe are really mission focused as well. And it's just a really inclusive work environment, being right in the heart of the ranch.
Okay. What specific skills do the participants learn on the job?
Absolutely. So we're really looking at food preparation and handling protocols, all those customer service, soft skills, interactions, also looking at, you know, teamwork, collaboration, time management, and then technical skills like cash handling and how to utilize a point of sale system and cooking, inventory, everything that would really go into, you know, the food industry or the hospitality industry right here in Las Vegas.
That's really amazing. What has the feedback been both from the participants and also from the customers so far?
Well, we just opened. We had our ribbon cutting on February 20th. So today was actually our first real opening. Our first customers came in this morning and they were just in awe of how beautiful it looked, the healthy options that were available in the grab-and-go refrigerator. We had some fresh baked muffins as well this morning. And our participants, oh my gosh, they're just so excited to be a part of it and to really show the skills that they've worked so hard to be able to, you know, have a job like this or to be a part of a program like this. It's just been a really, really beautiful interaction between, you know, the customers that are coming through, the community support that we have for our adults with disabilities in the Las Vegas community.
And how would an adult with disabilities apply for a job at the Collaboration Cafe?
Absolutely. So really, we have two paths. We have an inclusive hiring initiative, which really is employment. And then we also work with vocational training partners who act as like the job coaches for participants who may need a little bit more supportive employment before traditional employment. So if there's any participants who are interested in this program, they can reach us at pathways@collablv.org or go onto our website and put in an inquiry through our website. And our website is collablv.org.
And how does a family or individual become eligible or apply for the services at the Collaboration Center Foundation in general?
Thank you for asking that. So we provide free case management to any family, any individual within the community that may be impacted by intellectual, developmental, or physical disabilities or different learning styles. So we, through our Pathways Case Management Program, which is our flagship program, we offer free guidance and resources to, like I said, anyone in the community. How families can get connected is by contacting pathways at colablv.org, and we will get you assigned a case manager after doing a short intake process.
Nice. Okay. And then what sorts of opportunities do you have for community volunteers to help out at the Collaboration Center?
Oh my goodness, we love our community volunteers, and it is a beautiful place to be and volunteer. I mean, we have our campus gardens, we have community events coming up, we have our gala in April, we have many different family events as well that we are really excited to have volunteers be a part of. By way of just being on a 5-acre campus, we oftentimes will have different property kind of volunteer opportunities like planting our community garden. I mean, the possibilities are endless. So if there's any volunteers out there that are interested in working, with us or have a specific interest or a specific talent that we could benefit from, please contact us again at www.colablv.org.
All right, perfect. And you've mentioned that at the website, they can find out more about the Collaboration Center Foundation services. They can find out more about the Collab Cafe. They can apply. What else can people find out at collablv.org?
Well, you can understand a little bit more about what events we have coming up. So there's a calendar of events, and those are our family inclusion programs. So those are the programs that are available to all of our families, whether that be a caregiver support group, an adult social night out, a sibling support group. But then we also have our campus events like our gala and our resource fairs. Uniquely enough, our campus is also a venue space. Like I said, it's a beautiful property. So if anybody has any private event needs, like for example, I got married on our 5-acre campus. So
Uh-huh.
that we can do weddings, we can do birthdays, we can do corporate events. So there's many different things you can find out on our website. Really looking at how can you help as a volunteer. There's donation options as well, and how we can just further collaborate as a community. We're here for it. This is what we do.
Nice. That's awesome. All right. So once again, that website is collablv.org, collablv.org for the Collaboration Center Foundation. You can find out more about what the Collaboration Center Foundation does in the community. You can find out about their brand new Collaboration Cafe. If you would like to apply there, if you'd like to be a volunteer, if you'd like to apply for services from the foundation, all of that can be found at collablv.org. Or send them an email if you're looking for services, pathways@collablv.org. And we've been speaking today with Desiree Wingerter. She's Director of Programs for the Collaboration Center Foundation. And Desiree, it's been great hearing about the different events and the different developments that you have going on at the foundation, especially the Collaboration Cafe, which sounds absolutely amazing. Great opportunity for the participants who work there, and also sounds like a great place for people to hang out while they're in between services or checking out the campus.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
I appreciate yours. Thank you, Heather.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at easterseals.com.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Lynette Rivera, Director of Engagement and Communications for the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY. The organization is holding their annual plastic food drive through the month of March as an easy way for community members to help homeless kids. Lynette, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So, for those who don't know the organization, what is NPHY?
Yeah, so Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, we're the most comprehensive service provider exclusively working with youth experiencing homelessness here in Southern Nevada. So we work with youth between the ages of 12 and 24 years old and really provide all kinds of services. But, you know, our goal is to get youth off of the streets and really into a place of self-sufficiency. So that's always the ultimate goal. We do that by working to provide all kinds of services and really meeting youth where they're at. So, you know, we start with outreach where we go out into the community, out into schools, out into the most at-risk areas to meet youth where they're at, provide them with services, provide them with information about who we are and what we do, and then, you know, trying to get them through our doors. We also have a program here in Southern Nevada, which is our crisis intervention program, Safe Place. Safe Place is a national program, but we facilitate it here in Southern Nevada. So if you've ever been to a Terrible Herbst gas station, on an RTC bus, Las Vegas City Fire Station, Henderson Library, Clark County Library, those are all Safe Place locations. There is a very significant yellow diamond that sits in front of all of those locations to let a youth know that those are a safe place locations. And that makes our services available 24/7, 365 to young people who are in crisis. We also have a drop-in center over by UNLV where youth can come in and they can take showers, they can get food, they can get clothes, they can meet with our case managers who are all licensed social workers to ensure that, you know, we're not just putting a bandage on the situation, we're getting them all the immediate needs, but we're working with them to ensure that we have long-term goals. You know, how are we going to get them out of their situation? How are we going to reconnect them to school, education, employment, and all those different things that are going to get them to that place of self-sufficiency? We also have an emergency shelter, which is really another significant program because we have the only emergency shelter in Clark County that serves minors, so youth under 18. And, you know, if a youth under 18 was to walk into any other organization, they would unfortunately be turned away. So that is a really, really important program that we have here in Southern Nevada. And we also have a 50-bed housing program where youth live with us full time. You know, again, we provide case management, food, clothing, things like that, all those things that they need to support them while they're learning how to live in the community, learning public transportation, learning how to budget, learning all those things, but also having the safety net of MPHY and living, you know, within one of our housing beds. So that's a little bit, but a lot about our programs. And that's kind of our main programming that we have to young people in the community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. How many young people are we talking about who need NPHY services?
Yeah, so I mean, we have a huge homeless youth issue here in our community. Last year, or the 2023 to 2024 school year, Title I HOPE identified over 13,500 young people enrolled in Clark County schools who were experiencing homelessness. Now, that's, you know, everything from street homelessness to doubling up to couch surfing. There's a lot of different ways that young people could experience homelessness, but that's a really significant number. So, and that number over the years has fluctuated quite a bit. I will say that when I started here at MPHY and just getting involved in the issue of youth homelessness over 10 years ago, that number was just over 7,000. We've seen that number over the years grow to 15,000. And now we're, you know, we're getting back up to that almost 14,000 mark. So it is a huge number. And it's really unfortunate because we have a beautiful, growing and thriving community. And we want to make sure that all of our young people have what they need to also thrive and be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what is your plastic food drive all about?
Yeah, so our plastic food drive is a really unique way for people to get involved. As you know, working within the homelessness sector, a lot of people will do food drives in general in the community. So you'll see everything from a cereal drive to a canned food drive and everything in between. But for young people who are experiencing homelessness, they often don't have access to a microwave or a stove. So giving them perishable food items could be really tricky. Kentucky. So one thing that we do here at MPHY is we give out food gift cards, and that's fast food gift cards. So $10 fast food gift card could mean, a hot meal and in many places here in our city 24/7. So that is really the primary focus of the plastic food drive. So we're collecting $10 fast food gift cards and then $25 to $50 grocery store gift cards. And in there, we also ask for Amazon gift cards. We ask for, a lot of different gift cards, even Visa gift cards. These gift cards can be used for not just for food items, but really to help youth get a lot of different items that they may need. But the primary goal is to ensure that a young person has access to a hot meal 24 hours a day, even if our drop-in centers close, even if they, don't have access to that microwave or stove or have access to a friend's house, they will be able to go and get a meal from a place here in town.
Okay, and how long does the current plastic food drive run?
We launched it on March 1st and it runs through the end of the month, March 31st. Our goal is to raise about $10,000 in gift cards. So we're really looking for the community's support in achieving that goal.
All right, if someone is interested in taking part in the plastic food drive, how exactly do they get those food gift cards to you?
So there is definitely a few different ways that people can do that. So we are asking that people host drives. So you can host a drive within your family, within your workplace, within your church or school. And once that's completed, you can drop those items off here at our drop-in center, which is located right near UNLV. We're located at 4981 Shirley Street, right across the street from the Liberace Mansion. That's a really cool historical point here across the street from us. And the other way is they can go online. So they can go to our website, mphy.org. And they can also access, we have an Amazon wish list that they can access through our Instagram. So we're going to be dropping lots of different campaign graphics and things through our Instagram videos and all of that. So they can find the links to both the monetary donation page and an Amazon wish list through our Instagram. They can also find those on our website. They can drop the gift cards off. There's a lot of different ways. They can also give us a call, if they're trying to figure out a way. I will drive across town to go pick up gift cards. I'm always happy to do that. But any way that a person wants to get involved, we will make it happen. So they can just give us a call or go to our website or, reach out through Instagram or any of our social media handles.
Nice. Okay. And then what about cash donations?
Yeah, cash donations can be brought to our drop-in center. And again, those monetary donations can also be made online through our website. We do have a banner that is dedicated to our plastic food drive right on our website. So if they go to our website, click on that banner, it will take them to the exact page where they can make that monetary donation.
Awesome. And how are the gift cards distributed to the kids who need them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So gift cards are distributed on a case-by-case basis to youth who come into our drop-in center. We give out tons of gift cards on a daily basis. So, if a youth comes to us and they are a client of MPHY's who is looking to access food, they're always going to be able to access a gift card through their case manager. So we give those out through case management here at our drop-in center. We give them out to youth in our housing program. And then the other way we give them out is through outreach. We see thousands and thousands of young people through our outreach programs, lots of them who are experiencing homelessness or who are couch surfing or who may be living in shelters or weeklies with their families. So our outreach team will meet youth out in the streets and also give out gift cards to them if they are needed.
So, what's the website where people can go for more information about NPHY and what you do, or to donate to the plastic food drive?
MPHY.org.
All right, perfect. So, once again, NPHY.org is the website for Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY. NPHY.org. If you go there, you can find out more about what Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth does in the community, the work that they do to help the homeless youth, And you can also donate to the Plastic Food Drive, which once again is running to the end of March, March 31st. You can drop off gift cards at the drop-in center, which is at 4981 Shirley Street, Maryland Parkway and Tropicana, across from the Liberace Mansion, or you can do it all online. You can make a donation on the website or through the Amazon wish list, which is also there. And again, that website, nphy.org. And we've been speaking today with Lynette Rivera. She's the Director of Engagement and Communications for Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth. And Lynette, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about what NPHY does in the community, the good work that you're doing, and also letting us know about this plastic food drive, because that's so important to get food to those kids who don't have easy ways to access a hot meal. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Heather, and we appreciate you, as always, bringing awareness to NPHY and to all the things that we do in the community.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Jamie Gwen, celebrity chef, TV personality, syndicated radio host, and seven-time cookbook author. March is National Frozen Food Month, and new research from the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association reveals how Americans maximize their freezer space and rely on frozen foods for meal planning. Jamie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather. A pleasure. Happy National Frozen Food Month to you.
So how are consumers changing their grocery shopping patterns in 2025?
Well, they're doing it brilliantly, if I may say. The National Frozen Food and Refrigerated Association has researched and shown there is a significant shift going on in how we shop, especially with grocery prices at their highest, right? 83% of consumers are now using frozen foods to make meal planning easier. Those are smart consumers to me. I am a celebrity chef who embraces the frozen food aisle. And those consumers are really becoming more strategic shoppers. 64% of them are choosing frozen foods to combat the rising grocery costs. And I think it's a testament to a fundamental change in how we think about our freezer space, right? It used to be just storage. If things were aging or you wanted to capture the freshness, you would use your freezer. But if you really want to consider your budget and convenience, you can make fabulous meals when you use your freezer as a critical tool for meal planning. So when you think outside the box, there are extraordinary ways to put delicious dinners on the table using frozen foods that make it easy for me, that for my family, I will tell you, I feel extraordinarily proud to serve them.
Awesome. Okay. Now, with adults looking for a variety in their meal preparation, what creative frozen food combinations do you recommend?
Sure. Just for the record, my kiddo's looking for variety too. So I am always trying to mix it up. And here's what I do. If you've not perused the frozen food aisle lately, by the way, March is your chance. The values are extraordinary. There's lots of deep discounts. They're celebrating frozen food this month. And you'll find so much diversity in the frozen food aisle. I mean, the ethnic influence, the curries, the Indian fare, the Asian inspiration. You'll find fully cooked meals for those really busy days. But you're also going to find ingredients that you can incorporate into breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So for instance, when you talk about variety, my household loves a waffle. I have a favorite frozen waffle. It makes a great breakfast. But for dinner, I will either throw it into a taco holder or just lay it flat and fill it or top it with pulled barbecue chicken. And we do shredded carrots or scallions or sweet chili sauce, or I do a spicy mayo for me. And then we make literal like savory waffle sandwiches, and everybody at my table loves them. So now I'm using my waffle for breakfast and dinner. For breakfast specifically, I happen to love to layer frozen fruit with Greek yogurt and granola, and you get this really sophisticated parfait. And the frozen fruit, by the way, was picked at its peak of freshness. It's the sweetest fruit you'll find. Don't get me wrong, I love fresh too, but that's my go-to. And the frozen fruit makes this lovely juice that layers with the yogurt and the granola. I mean, we've come a long way. IQF, or individually quick frozen, is how we capture the freshness today. And the health benefits of frozen food have skyrocketed because of that. I take frozen grilled chicken. Somebody grilled it for me. It's all natural. Why wouldn't I use it? And I make the best bowls. I put cauliflower rice from the frozen food aisle as the base. And my kiddo loves those. I use the frozen veggies for quick stir fries. I mean, when you think about it, you're getting really restaurant quality results with minimal prep time.
Yeah. Now, you did mention convenience, and obviously most people are interested in being able to make their dinner quickly. We've got a lot of stuff on the go. So when it comes to the quickest prep options, what are your time-saving tips?
So first, I would tell you to embrace your air fryer, because much of the frozen food that I love to buy is fabulously flavored, but it has a textural component as well. And I find that the crispy shrimp that my kiddo loves, the coconut shrimp, I mean, there's so many different choices in the frozen food aisle. They crisp up so beautifully in the air fryer. You're saving time there as well. And I take those crispy shrimp, by the way, and I throw them into lettuce leaves, and we do lettuce wrap with the crispy shrimp and shredded carrots and sliced cucumber and your favorite sauce or dressing, whatever it is. But again, the possibilities are endless. Embrace your air fryer and think about using your frozen foods in different ways that are quick cook. So for instance, if you want a convenient 5-minute meal, you take your Asian dumplings and you throw them into a pot of chicken broth. And then you use the leftover veggies in your produce bin in your fridge and you fill it up. And you have a 5-minute soup wonder that is delicious, that everybody loves, that they sit down and fill up on because you've got those yummy Asian dumplings from the freezer section in them. But who would have thought, right? There's lots of ways to save time and money. There's also lots of inspiration, Heather. Just so you know, we have a bevy of delicious recipes using frozen foods as the inspiration at easyhomemeals.com, easyhomemeals.com. And there's also a chance to win $10,000 worth of prizes in the month of March for National Frozen Food Month. I am not eligible. I hope you win at easyhomemeals.com.
Okay, awesome. And is that a great place to also learn more about cooking with frozen foods for National Frozen Food Month?
Oh, definitely so. You're going to find recipes that will inspire you to go walk the aisle. This is also a time, you know, when there are such extraordinary values in the freezer section. Buy something you've never bought before. Try it. Like, venture out, experience a new taste. It's oftentimes how I introduce new flavors to my 5-year-old. And I'll tell you, he just absolutely eats it up, pun intended.
That's awesome. All right. So once again, that website is easyhomemeals.com, easyhomemeals.com. They've got plenty of recipes there, inspiration for using frozen foods to cook in National Frozen Food Month and beyond. And of course, if you go there during Frozen Food Month, there's a March Frozen Food Month $10,000 sweepstakes that you can enter as well. easyhomemeals.com. And we've been speaking with Jamie Gwen. She's a celebrity chef, TV personality, 7-time cookbook author. And Jamie, you know, listening to you describe how you cook with frozen foods, it's like, you know, I'm kind of thinking, well, I could never do that, but you make it sound easy. So I think maybe I could.
Oh, I believe you can.
Thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure.
When history repeats itself, so does care. Since 1945, when the original care package inspired a spirit of shared humanity around the world, care has seen war and famine, pandemics, and natural disasters. But we've also seen the power of hope and resilience. Now, care works in over 110 countries, reaching over 170 million people. But we need you to help everyone reach their full potential. Join at care.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Robert Shin, Director of the Multiple Sclerosis and Clinical Neuroimmunology Division at UVA Health, and Roger, who was diagnosed with MS in 2022. March is MS Awareness Month, but most people don't know much about the chronic disease or its three main types. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Dr. Shin, what exactly is multiple sclerosis or MS?
Multiple sclerosis is an immune system disease where the immune system attacks the brain and spinal cord. So that creates all kinds of different neurological symptoms, which include vision issues, weakness, numbness, dizziness, tingling. There are different types of MS, as you mentioned. There are relapsing forms of MS and progressive forms of MS, as well as something we call primary progressive MS. Almost 1 million Americans are living with MS. So being aware of this condition, but also understanding that this is now a treatable condition, is super important.
Okay. What are the key differentiators between those three types of MS?
That's a great question. So even though I said MS affects the brain and spinal cord, it can do so in different patterns. So many individuals experience what we call relapses or attacks or exacerbations. They're all just different words for the same thing, where you're minding your own business and then suddenly something's not working. Maybe you can't see well out of one eye. Maybe you've got tingling on one side of your body. Maybe you're suddenly imbalanced. Those episodes usually are self-limiting, but we refer to those as relapses, and that characterizes relapsing forms of MS. However, it's important to remember that people with MS may experience something that's more subtle. They may have gradually worsening symptoms. Maybe their balance isn't just, you know, not as good as it used to be, gradually getting worse. Maybe their memory issues, and it can be very subtle, or fatigue or bladder symptoms. That kind of gradual change we refer to as progressive MS. And some people, the first or only thing they've experienced really is progression, and that's what we call primary progressive MS.
Okay. Roger, what has your experience with MS been like?
So, like you said, I was diagnosed in 2022. And about a decade before that is when I had my first relapse, and I lost vision in my right eye. And I went in to the neurologist, got an MRI done, and they didn't see anything at that time. So for about a decade, I just dealt with the different things with leg pain and brain fog. And eventually in 2021, I had another bout of vision loss in my other eye. And that landed me at the practice that I am today and with the diagnosis.
Okay. Now, Dr. Shin, Roger went a decade without a proper diagnosis. Is that normal with MS?
That is actually surprisingly common, and it's really because MS affects people often in a young age group, so they're otherwise healthy. And sometimes the symptoms are very subtle, a little blurred vision, a little bit of tingling. Sometimes people won't even go to the healthcare provider to get it checked out. Even when they do, sometimes it takes doctors a long time to figure out what's going on. I will let your audience know that women are more affected than men, but men and women can get MS, obviously. It can affect people of any racial group, for example. As I mentioned, 1 million Americans have MS, but I have to be honest and say there are many living out there who don't know yet that they have MS, and it's really on us to make the correct diagnosis.
Now, you mentioned a younger age group. What is the age group where MS is most often diagnosed?
Well, I would emphasize that really anyone can be diagnosed with MS. So there can be even children. We have pediatric MS, and people in older age groups can be diagnosed with MS. But by far, the bulk of individuals are diagnosed with MS between the ages of 20 and 40, so really young adults.
Yeah, okay. Now, Dr. Shin, you've mentioned treatment a few times. What kinds of treatment are available for managing MS?
Well, for context, MS was actually not a treatable condition back in, let's say, the early 1990s. So we've made tremendous progress at treating and controlling this condition. The most recently approved treatment by the FDA is a medicine called Ocrevus Zunovo. So Roger and I are happy to partner with Genentech, which is the manufacturer of Ocrevus Zunovo. Ocrevus Zunovo is related to another medicine called Ocrevus. And these medicines, we have over a decade of data with this treatment. But what Ocrevus Zunovo, what makes it unique is that it's a twice a year treatment administered by a healthcare provider. But each of these treatments, once every 6 months, can be given in just 10 minutes versus hours of treatment with other medications. So we, of course, will watch out for things like injection site reactions, make sure that we're not having any infections. But we wanted your audience to know that there is this newly approved treatment option, and really people should have a conversation with their provider about whether something like this might be right for them. And there is a website to find out more information, ocrevus.com, O-C-R-E-V-U-S.com, to find out more about this particular option.
You mentioned it used to be not treatable. Now it is treatable, but it's still not curable?
Well, that's an excellent question. Some of the targets of what we're trying to do when we treat multiple sclerosis is prevent those MS relapses we talked about, prevent changes on MRI, and to prevent disability accumulation. In the past, I think if people had heard of MS, they often associated it with walkers and wheelchairs or using a cane. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. So today we talk about, as a target, having no evidence of disease activity, so no attacks, no change in MRI, no increase in disability over time. So we're careful not to necessarily call that a cure, but I think that as a goal, we really do want to make it so that people living with MS are not affected by their disease.
Okay. And Roger, what would you like people to know about MS and the treatment for it?
So I think with my experience, I took it and really wanted to talk with my doctor about the options. So when I first got diagnosed, we went through all the different types of medications that were available to me. And Ocrevus Zunovo was the one that really stood out because of that 10-minute window and the twice a year. Being a busy dad with kids and a wife and a life, this short option is extremely beneficial for people who are really busy and allows you to fit it in your schedule pretty well. So what I'd really like everyone to know is that even if you are diagnosed with MS, you can still live your life. There are plenty of options out there, and you just need to talk to your doctor about which one's the best for you.
Yeah, awesome advice. Now, Dr. Shin, you mentioned a website. Could you please tell it one more time where people can go to find out more about treatment for MS?
Sure. You can find out about Ocrevus Zunovo and Ocrevus at Ocrevus.com, O-C-R-E-V-U-S.com.
All right. So once again, that website is Ocrevus.com, O-C-R-E-V-U-S.com, if you want to find out more about some of the new treatments for MS. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Robert Shin. He's the director of the Multiple Sclerosis and Clinical Neuroimmunology Division at UVA Health, and also Roger, who was diagnosed with MS 3 years ago in 2022. Both of you, I appreciate you being here, sharing this information with us, especially since March is MS Awareness Month. But of course, this is definitely important information for people to know about all year round. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Staying active and healthy as we age starts with strong bones. To keep your bones strong, you need calcium, vitamin D, and regular exercise. A bone density test called DEXA helps detect low bone mass and bone disease called osteoporosis. If you're 65 or older, Medicare provides free bone density tests every 2 years. Ask your doctor to schedule yours. For more information on how to be bone strong, visit pathtogoodbonehealth.org.
Do you know what time it is? Odds are you do, but why? And who decided what time it is right now? Hi, I'm David Rankin.
And I'm Kristen Diaz. Join us as we explore the history of time, how we determined what time it is, and why we change it twice a year to save daylight. This is How Time Works, an Odyssey Conversation. The first place most people experience a rigid schedule is in school.
Dr. Kyla Wahlstrom is a research fellow and lecturer at the University of Minnesota. She was recently the director of the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the university.
What's the general concept when it comes to school schedules? Why are they and why have they been the way that they have been?
That's an interesting question because it varies by location. But I can tell you that I was a former school administrator for almost 20 years. Before I became a research professor. And school districts set their work schedules, their class schedules, and their bus schedules based on historically what they have done in the past. So people have believed that, and this is during the agricultural agrarian times, people believed that the oldest students would go first, then the junior high or middle school students, and finally the elementary school students would be bused last. It's interesting because as we in the medical field have found very interesting information about the circadian rhythms of the brain sleep schedules for teenagers, the school schedule should actually be flipped so that the youngest children who tend to wake up early, if you had a child at home and you know that they tend to wake up at 6:37 in the morning, they're raring to go. And often that seems to be the best time for elementary schools to begin would be the first round of the busing schedules. Next would be the middle schools and finally the high schools. So it's basically been a matter of precedent and habit that school districts set those schedules to have high school first, start first, then middle school, and then elementary.
There's been a push to have schools start later. What's the source of the conversation about when schools start their day?
It's interesting because in 1996, I did the first research that looked at a high school that made a change to a later starting time. And from 1996 until today, there has been over 1,000 school districts in the U.S. that have made that change to where high schools begin latest and the elementary students generally begin earlier than high schools. That conversation has taken these past 26 years to happen across districts across the United States. Specifically, the states of California and Florida have made a statewide decision to have teenagers in high school begin the latest of all of the bus routes in the daytime of the school schedule. That's because the medical research is very clear that adolescents have a very different sleep-wake schedule than do pre-adolescent children. So the human brain doesn't really allow teenagers to fall asleep because of the hormonal development during teenage years until about 10:30 or 11 at night. And then we also know that teenagers need to have about 9 hours or 9 hours and 15 minutes would be the premium amount of time that teenagers should sleep. So if you factor in the brain change for their sleep schedule with the early starting time of high schools, and you have a real crash of mental health, sleepiness, and other serious factors, health factors that have to do with the teenagers getting up early to go to school. So all of this medical information formed the national conversation about why it is a public health policy for teenagers to have the latest school starting time. And that's what the states of California and Florida, their legislatures had discussed this and decided this was good public health policy to have teenagers in their high schools be the latest starting schools in a school district.
Now, flipping the schedule around could create some challenges for some families, like an older sibling being able to watch a younger sibling while the parents are at work.
Absolutely true. And you know, it's interesting that those are the kinds of discussions that in the school districts that have made the change, there have been excellent local discussions about how to solve those kinds of realistic problems, because they are realistic challenges that schools and parents and bus companies, transportation directors have to face. Now, that said, it's also not good public health policy to have teenagers going to school early just so they can be babysitters for younger children. So that aside, then if that is not good public health policy, just to, you know, keep them as babysitters, the school districts that have successfully accommodated the change have instituted excellent after-school childcare at the school district, perhaps on a sliding fee scale. They've worked with local daycare providers to bring the bus, the children, to the daycare homes instead of the children's family home. Parents have had their work schedules being altered or changed by their employers as needed. There are many other things, the local YMCA, YWCA, those kinds of community ed programs also have been able to arise and rise to the occasion that would have them participating in the solution for what to do about the younger kids when they're dismissed earlier than the teenage kids.
What about teacher and staff perspective on school hours? What's their reception been to a change like this?
I'm glad you asked that question because often teachers' needs and their personal lives and their work as educational professionals is not taken into account. I can tell you that I was involved in a major research study in Cherry Creek, Colorado, the school district there, where there were 25,000 students that were engaged in this five-year research project. We assessed the teachers' experiences before and after the time change for them. The teachers, by and large, basically said the time changes were positive for them. Elementary teachers said the kids came to school eager, ready to learn, and not having been up since 6 a.m. And at 9 a.m., they're kind of already half their learning time is gone. So the elementary teachers loved the fact that the kids came ready to learn. On the other hand, the high school teachers said they had many, many fewer students falling asleep in class. So they had better luck just in terms of getting students to stay awake and when they're teaching. And the teachers' personal lives absolutely were benefited because they weren't rushing around in the morning necessarily to get their own kids off to school or get themselves ready to school. So it's been beneficial by and large all around for the instructional staff. I can also tell you that the administrators have said without question that the mood in the hallways and in the cafeteria has been much more calm in the high schools. And there's fewer incidents on the playground for the younger kids. Everybody's in a different, better space than they were when everybody seemed to be sleep deprived or cranky because they didn't get the right amount of sleep at the right time.
Does daylight saving time have an impact on kids in school? What have you seen so far?
It's interesting that the whole issue of daylight saving time has risen to the forefront of discussion among pediatricians. And I can tell you that the springtime change, when you spring forward, it's easier on young children because they tend to be early risers. So we lose that hour of sleep. And for about a week, right after the time change happens, it works really well. And then these young children adapt and adjust to the early time change. The reverse is true for teens. For teenagers, because they tend to be late risers in the morning. So for them to spring ahead in the spring, they actually, a study has shown that they lose about a half hour of sleep every night for the first week after the time change because it just totally messes up their brain sleep-wake cycle. So all that being said, it takes about a week for both teenagers and pre-teenagers to have their internal clock adjust to the time change during daylight saving time. But the reverse is true. Then we go to the fall and we fall back. So then we know that the fallback is easier on teenagers because we actually gain an extra hour when we fall back in the fall. So teenagers really benefit from that extra time for that week that they're still adjusting. It's just a matter of adjustment. But, you know, the human body is pretty flexible when it comes to making those. I mean, people travel and they deal with time change often enough. It just takes time. It sounds like a crazy thing to say. It takes time to adjust to the time.
Okay, well, let's now look at the opposite end of the school day. How long do kids need to be in the classroom? And how does moving the start of the school day later affect that?
Well, that's a good question. And individual school districts have to follow their state laws about the time that is called seat time for the students in classes. In general, students are in school generally 6 3/4 hours a day. Now, that is, again, state dependent, but that's ballpark, about 6 1/2 to 6 3/4 hours per day. So with the change in the starting time, say for high schools, for instance, then those that begin at 8:30 or later, they would be dismissing, say, at 3 or 3:30, accounting for lunchtime and all that, those other issues that are in the middle of the day. That still allows, and all the research we found, still allows teenagers to participate in sports without any reduction in amount of participation or clubs, activities, even after school employment for teenagers doesn't generally begin until 4 p.m. So the dismissal time after 4 p.m. is pretty much the latest that is feasible for teens to be healthy, but still also participate in activities after school.
What about outside of schools, like sports or walking to and from school? What's the conversation on daylight saving time's impact on kids?
Well, the biggest concern, I believe, is when teenagers are driving. And when we have that spring ahead time, when teenagers lose an hour of sleep time during the spring, it does provide more daylight for them. But teenage drivers, I mean, if they're sleepy for a week after the time change, then that's of concern just in terms of accidents and things. I don't know. You know, it's sort of a you trade off one thing for another, because having spring ahead, you actually get more daylight for the activities that are outside, like sports, baseball and soccer and those kinds of things. I think it's just a matter of adjusting. And unless there is a major reason to not spring ahead or not fall back other than that week, it's just difficult for teenagers to have that week in the spring when they lose an hour of sleep every night.
Why not have all the schools start at the same time?
That would be wonderful, but it's not financially feasible for most school districts if they have multi-tiered busing. And that means that they use the buses in several runs. So they would take a bus out, pick up the elementary age kids first, and then use the same buses to pick up middle school and then high school. Interestingly, rural school districts send out one bus to a outlying rural area, and they will pick up all students, kindergarten through 12th grade, in the same bus. And so that allows actually everybody to benefit, because the bus run picks up all the kids at one time. They bring them to their appropriate schools in a rural school district, and it works out really well for everybody. But it is not practical when you have a school district, say, of 10,000, 15,000 students to run, you'd be running buses all over the place. And it's easier for them to be busing certain ages of kids with each bus run.
What have the kids had to say about the school schedules?
The earliest studies that I did in 96, cell phones didn't exist then, okay? Which was an amazing contrast to do the studies now in, as compared to what I did in 1996. Because without cell phones and social media, the high school students in those years, absolutely, they changed the time change and they got an hour and a half more of sleep every night. But now with social media and phones and computer tablets and homework turn-in time being midnight, it's really negatively affected the quality and the timing of sleep, especially of students that have access to a phone. It's really changed the dynamic of getting adequate sleep for, especially for teenagers. Yes.
This is How Time Works, an Odyssey conversation produced by Dennis Foley.
Be sure to download the free Odyssey app to listen to your favorite radio station like this one anywhere at any time.
I'm David Rankin.
And I'm Kristen Diaz.
And that was How Time Works.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is holding their annual plastic food drive through March 31st. You can purchase gift cards through their Amazon wish list, make a donation online, or drop off fast food and grocery gift cards at the NPHY Drop-In Center, 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donate or find out more at nphy.org. That's nphy.org. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, March 10th at 8 p.m. benefiting Life by Music, and Monday, March 24th at 8 p.m. benefiting Care Chest. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The 22nd annual Walk with the Heart of a Child to support the Children's Heart Foundation is happening on Saturday, March 29th at Craig Ranch Regional Park with 9 a.m. registration and 10 a.m. opening ceremonies and walk. Vendors, community partner booths, Kids Zone, and food trucks will be on site as well. Find out more or register to walk at chfn.org. That stands for Children's Heart Foundation Nevada, chfn.org. The 7th annual Walk for Friendship Las Vegas Fundraiser Walk and Community Carnival is happening on Sunday, March 30th, with check-in at 10 a.m., welcome ceremony at 11 a.m., walk at 11:30, and carnival at noon at Las Vegas Sports Park, 1400 North Rampart Boulevard. Support the Friendship Circle's efforts to provide social and recreational opportunities for children and young adults with disabilities. Find out more or register at walkforfriendshiplv.com. That's the number 4, walkforfriendshiplv.com. The Collaboration Center Foundation's 5th annual Night on Blanc Gala is happening on Friday, April 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Collaboration Center's campus, 8390 West Windmill between Durango and Buffalo. This year's honoree is Mayor Shelley Berkeley, and proceeds support the Collaboration Center's programming for families touched by disabilities. Get tickets or more information at collablv.org. That's collablv.org. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their 23rd annual Walk for Wishes fundraising event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 26th, with 7 a.m. registration and the walk and run starting at 8 a.m. at Town Square, Las Vegas. Make-A-Wish chapters and affiliates across the globe come together each year to celebrate World Wish Day, the anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of Make-A-Wish back in 1980. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/walk. That's wish.org/snv/walk.